This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. In Jeffrey Deaver's latest novel, his forensics genius, Lincoln Rhyme, doesn't just take on a murderer. He takes on the entire United States government. The plot of The Kill Room revolves around the murder of an American citizen in the Bahamas, and the investigation reveals that it was his very own government that did it. If that plot sounds familiar, it's because just weeks ago, President Obama revealed that he did authorize the killing of an American citizen abroad who was suspected of terrorism. Best-selling author Jeffrey Deaver is going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tomorrow, but first he joins us by phone. Jeffrey, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Frank, good to talk to you again, as always.
Give us a synopsis now. The Kill Room is a lot of intrigue, and it turns out is in the headlines. Who would have figured, huh?
Yeah, I want to send a thank you note to our wonderful president for having that press conference about, I guess that was about 10 days or so ago. I curiously thought of the idea for the book, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the situation you alluded to, the Anwar al-Awlaki killing, the drone strike in Yemen a few years ago. And if your listeners aren't familiar with him, he was a U.S. citizen, lived in Virginia, the Northern Virginia area, but became a radicalized terrorist supporter and moved to Yemen. And from there, he primarily on the internet was encouraging terrorist acts. And the government apparently thought he was representing an imminent threat and took him out along with another U.S. citizen who happened to be his, I think, internet associate or internet guru. Well, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And I, as a former attorney who did not do this kind of law, but was very interested with this conflict of seeking justice extrajudicially. And I thought, well, I'm going to write a book about that. And that became The Kill Room, in which there is an apparent terrorist, a U.S. citizen, in the Bahamas, which is a little closer to home than Yemen, of course. And the government says, well, this guy is about to do something terrible. Let's take him out to prevent that terrible act. And oops, it turns out that terrible act was simply a peaceful protest. And maybe this fellow wasn't as bad as we thought. A young idealistic prosecutor in New York City brings a case against the head of the government agency and the fellow who actually pulled the trigger. And with that, The Kill Room gets started. And Lincoln and Amelia, my main characters, try to put together a case, and a whole bunch of people try to stop them.
And of course, what's interesting is that you did not write this novel in the last 10 days. You got started before the news conference. So clearly something like this had been on your mind already.
It is. I've written, primarily, I guess I call them sick and twisted psychological thrillers. Nothing makes me more excited than a really good serial killer. That's always fun material to work with. But in my books, I've tended to stay away from politics primarily because it's a slow-moving phenomenon. As I said, I was an attorney. I've never written a legal thriller because I like the story to move very, very quickly. The Kill Room is typical. It takes place over about 2 days or so. And the idea of writing a political intrigue novel, they're kind of long. They can be very compelling, but I want something to move more like a roller coaster. But then it occurred to me, well, here's something that does involve guns, does involve bad guys, could involve mercenaries, arms dealers, and it's a whole good stew of intrigue. I thought I could bring my trademark fast-paced plotting to the story.
Well,
the book wrote itself pretty quickly.
Even though the politics and the debate over whether or not we should be targeting Americans if they are on American soil, if they pose an imminent threat, all of that, that's a long, drawn-out conversation. But the tension of a prosecutor having to prosecute a case, investigate a case, that it's its own thing, right? There's an investigation. A murder has happened. There's a way that we go about this. The tension between that and then coming up against the federal government that might want to stop what the rest of us want to go through, that's immediate. That's an immediate threat to that prosecutor and the investigators in the case.
Sure, Frank. And that was one of the things in the back of my mind, that people tend not to look at the, I guess I call it the overlay of our fantastic judicial system that has really all aspects of our life under its care. well, we take out a bad guy overseas, and, you know, we think, well, there's certainly moral issues about that, but we don't really hear that put in terms of, well, I'm a cop, I'm going to arrest you for doing that, and I'm a prosecutor, I'm going to try to put you in jail for doing that. And as someone who researched the book pretty carefully, I looked at the law, and there are provisions that will permit the arrest and prosecution of a government official who operates what's called outside the scope of his or her authority. And that's sort of the basis of the kill room, that our young prosecutor, a woman named Nance Laurel, certainly is idealistic and certainly believes that we should not be targeting these individuals without proper court order and court involvement. But, nonetheless, she said, well, we're going to just arrest this fellow and put him in jail, and that's going to be a lesson to the people who feel that perhaps there is a war on terror, but, maybe we shouldn't be pushing the rules too far. We still are a government of laws.
Well, it's amazing, and it's kind of wonderful that this genre, a kind of detective novel that's been with us for a while, can so well illuminate the complexities of a system that whenever you authorize a monopoly on violence, whether it's your government is the only authorized user of violence that can't be punished, you raise a lot of very serious moral questions under what seems to be a very, again, simple investigation. Find the bad guy, throw him in jail.
That was really my intention, Frank, and I appreciate your noticing that, because I think Ernest Hemingway said, if you're a novelist and you want to send a message, go to Western Union. Don't put it in your book.
Yeah.
Of course, nowadays he'd probably say put it on Facebook or send a tweet. And his point being, of course, that authors should not preach. I personally have a position on targeted assassinations. I'm sure you do. Every concerned citizen really ought to be thinking about this. But my job is really to enhance my book, make it emotionally real for readers. And by putting these questions, and I simply ask the question, I don't say whether it's good or bad, but by asking those questions, it kind of enriches the story and gives readers something to chew on after they close the final page. But typically of a Deaver book, it moves fast. It's a typical thriller, a lot of shoot 'em up stuff, car chases, and the whole ball of wax.
Well, you also took over the James Bond series of books made famous by Ian Fleming. Do you consider, that's certainly adventure. Is that a mystery, James Bond, those spy thrillers? Is that in any way, would you consider that part of the mystery genre as well?
I define crime fiction into basically two categories. One is a mystery, as you mentioned, and the other is a thriller. And the difference between those is, in a mystery, the detective primarily tries to find out what happened in the past tense. So you discover the body. The vicar's body is found behind the church, and the Agatha Christie, Miss Marple character tries to decide what happened. And that's often an intellectual puzzle and very fun to read and rather diverting. On the other side, the books I write are thrillers in which the question is asked, what is going to happen? And there may be a bit of investigation involved in the past, but we know something is looming in the future. And if the hero does not stop the terrorist or the serial killer from striking again, there will be a loss of some terrible loss. And that, to me, is a bit more engaging. And so the Bond book, at least my Bond book, Carte Blanche, which I wrote about a year and a half ago, that always asks the question, is Bond going to stop this nefarious villain, Severin Height was his name, stop him from doing something terrible in the future? Just as in The Kill Room, will Lincoln and Amelia not only put together the case, but will they stop my particularly nefarious villain, a fellow named Jacob Swan? Will they stop him before he strikes again?
Well, and that's what's great about that kind of a novel, is that there has to be a certain amount of sleuthing that gets in the past, figures out what happened and who did it. And then once you figure that out, go stop them. So yeah, I guess you get the best of both worlds in a book like that.
Exactly. Yeah, I combine the two. It's sort of my books tend to be hybrids of both the mystery and the thriller genre.
Well, and another way I think that happens, you know, you're the protagonist, Lincoln Rhyme, in this series of books, and now in your latest, The Kill Room, you know, is somebody who is he's paraplegic. He has a number of other kind of psychological things going on with him. And the books are also made into films. The Bone Collector is one. In fact, I want to hear a clip actually from the trailer of Bone Collector with Denzel Washington. Let's listen.
For 15 years, he was New York City's leading forensic cop. But Detective Lincoln Rhyme had given up on life.
9 to 8, 6.
Until a killer with no mercy.
You heard about that couple that got in a taxi, never made it home?
Stop this car!
Found him dead, buried, hands sticking out of the ground with his wife's diamond wedding band shoved on one of his fingers.
That's a clip from the 1999 film The Bone Collector, starring Denzel Washington, based on a book written by Jeffrey Deaver, our guest today. He's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tomorrow to talk about his newest novel, The Kill Room. And what I want to talk about is that character, Lincoln Rhyme, because it also, it seems to me, combines two characters from the crime-fighting genre. You know, there's Dirty Harry, who's out for revenge. There's no mystery. We know who did it. In fact, that's the problem. Everybody knows who did it, and the cops can't do anything about it, so I'm going to do it myself. And then there's the sort of the on-the-spectrum type of detective, you know, Sherlock Holmes. I mean, there's something wrong with that guy, right? And when you right? And he is so detached that it almost disturbs you. And what we have in Lincoln Rhyme is somebody who is emotionally engaged or gets emotionally engaged and yet has this other ability to put the whole thing together in his head that we associate with a kind of detachment, that you almost have to be detached in order to be that rational. Kind of an interesting character. How did you come up with that character? How did he come alive for you?
My goal in writing these thrillers basically is just to entertain people. I want people to, you know, smile at the end of the book when they read it, or ideally, you know, wipe their brow and say, oh my gosh, I survived that book. It was kind of a touch and go for a moment, but I was, you know, very engaged. I just really enjoyed the book. Part of that is creating unique characters. And, you know, I've written about 32 novels now, and I've written about the alcoholic policeman, and I've written about the wise guy Private Eye. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we'll see those conventions of crime fiction forever, I'm sure. But I thought, what can I do that's unique, that will excite my readers in a way that they have not been excited before? I thought, well, what I want to do is create a character who has to use his mind as a weapon. And he can't walk into the bar and beat up somebody and get information. He can't, at the last minute, pull out a gun and blow away the bad guy. He has to set up traps the same way a master chess player will set up his opponent. And I thought, well, maybe I could have a character who's duct taped, his hands are taped behind him for the whole book. Well, that's a bit of a cliche, too. So I thought, no, I'm going to go all out and make him paralyzed so that he has absolutely no opportunity to physically track down the bad guy. And Lincoln was born from that concept, and I never thought he would be as popular as he was. The first book was going to be a standalone. But then, as you say, Denzel Washington, Angelina Jolie was in the film as well. They wanted to play the parts. And when they say, we'd like to play a role in your book, you say yes. That's a very important rule. Remember
you didn't
that?
Say, Angelina Jolie, no, I don't see you in that part. You didn't
yeah,
say that?
I don't think so. No, I said yes. Oh, you mean you're going to pay me for this too? Is that right? I'm a bit naive in the book business world back then. But the character has taken off, and if my theory about writing these novels, I think, as you and I have spoken before, is to entertain the audience. Right. It's all about the readers. It's not about the author. I get paid to make up things. It doesn't get any better than that. So I'm very conscious of listening to my fans. They love Lincoln, and so he's going to keep coming back.
And he's come back many times. I wonder, though, when you create a quadriplegic character like this, if you have found yourself painted into a corner now and then and had to kind of work your way out because of his condition.
I have indeed. But I was thinking about it, and Lincoln certainly has a series of limitations. But I stay pretty true to medical science, and there have been quite some advancements lately in improving the condition of individuals who suffer severe disabilities like that. And so in the kill room, in fact, there we will see some alterations. I don't want to give too much away, but we'll see some alterations in Lincoln's condition that really play into the plot in a rather significant way, I think. And so, yes, there are some difficulties with him being in a condition like that. But then I was thinking about it, that every character in my book, and you know, maybe every character in every book, has limitations of some sort. And every author has to work around those and incorporate them into the into the book. And we think of people like House, the Hugh Laurie character on the TV show. I think Monk was a detective. Tony Shalhoub had his issues. And those are just some extreme examples. You know, even Miss Marple had some issues that limited her in a way, maybe the class structure in England at the time and where she lived. So we authors really are under an obligation, I think, to make fully fleshed out characters. Lincoln has a severe set of disabilities that do affect him, but part of the appeal, I think, is his working around those, not letting them completely debilitate him from being a productive detective.
Well, and the other thing, and I know that you don't want to preach in these things, and the novels are always entertaining, but it also does force us to examine our prejudices about just what is disability, as you just said, and what isn't, and the capabilities of people who we find in these conditions. And, you know, it shatters some myths that you do along the way, along with so many other wonderful things. Jeffrey Deaver, thank you so much for talking with us.
Frank, a real pleasure, as always.
Jeffrey Deaver, best-selling author with a home in Chapel Hill. His latest novel, The Kill Room, going to be at Quail Ridge Books tomorrow in Raleigh, 7:30. For more information, go to our website, WUNC.org. And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.